Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Hey, and this is Paul Dennis speaking to you from the Real Deadwood in the Black Hills of South Dakota, bringing you episode number 7 of the Real Deadwood Podcast, a variety show for fans of the award-winning HBO Deadwood series all over the world, combining interviews, entertainment, and news from both Deadwoods. Our show today is outstanding as usual. We're going to start off with some HBO Deadwood actors entertainment and something a little bit different this time. When they were here over the summer, there was a Saturday night performance, and then there was a Sunday night dinner. And these took place at the Charlie Utter Theater, which is part of Saloon No. 10 here in Deadwood. So you've seen in the show Hawkeye, who is actually Monty Hawkeye Henson, who's a world championship bronc rider. He is a consultant to the show, and then he also plays Hawkeye, who's kind of Silas Adams' henchman. In one of the episodes, he gets beat up by Earl Brown as Dan Doherty, and of course Dan Doherty is jealous of Silas Adams, kind of winning the favor of Al Swearengen, and then Silas Adams grabs a guy and shoves him up against the antlers and everything that are hanging on the wall. I don't know if you remember that episode, but anyway, Hawkeye Henson is a great singer and guitar player, and actually has a couple albums out. So he did kind of a funny song that night, and we're going to have a performance by Monty Hawkeye Henson playing and singing for you. And then after that, Jim Beaver, who plays Ellsworth, got up and did a hilarious kind of a comedy routine. And so we're going to have the first half of Jim Beaver's comedy routine. So those things happened right in a row. And so we're going to go right from Hawkeye Henson right into Jim Beaver. After that, we're going to have a conversation with my wife, Mary Kopko, the director of Deadwood's Adams Museum and House. And then after that, I'm going to have the final episode of my interview with Mitch Ryder. Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, of course, were a very famous group from the 60s, and Mitch Ryder was here in Deadwood performing at Cool Deadwood Nights over the summer. Following that, we will have our normal sound seeing tour with Alex, my son, who is the tour guide up at Mount Moriah Cemetery, the current home of Wild Bill Hickok and Calamity Jane, and we'll have the next part of his tour. Following that, we'll have another sneak preview of a song from Earl Brown and his band, the Sacred Cowboys. He was nice enough to send me another song from their soon-to-be-released CD, so we will hear that. And then, following that, we'll have an interview with Joe Hamm. Now, he's the events coordinator with the Deadwood Chamber of Commerce, and he will be telling us a little bit about how they find the bands and the talent that we have here every year in Deadwood over the summer and the number of free concerts that we have here and events. So that'll be fun to talk to him. And then finally, we will wrap it up with some HBO Deadwood news talk a little bit about Homestake Mining Company, which was founded by George Hurst. And, of course, you've seen George Hurst introduced in Season 2 of the HBO Deadwood series. So that's how we're going to wrap it up. But let's go ahead and get things kicked off now with very entertaining performances by Monty Hawkeye Henson and Jim Beaver.
Well, it's hard to say I love you when you're sitting on my face. Maybe I'm blue. the fun. No place I like finer than Dealey, Carolina. I'll get Paula to explain that one to you when I'm done.
When I was there, we'd been going through about a 20-year beauty famine. I don't want to speak disrespectful of the women of Tarzan. They just wasn't none of them anything worth looking at. You know, they was 3 years running there. We had a beauty contest in town, and nobody won it. And one year we did give the first prize ribbon to the band leader. He walked kind of funny.
And there's some funny stuff from Jim Beaver. So, and there's much more to come. I've got another good 7 minutes worth next week. So make sure you come back and hear the rest of Jim Beaver's funny routine there. Okay, next we're going to talk to Mary Kopko, the director of the Adams Museum and House, who has been supplying research to HBO Deadwood for years and years now to make sure that the show is accurate when it comes to the set, the buildings, the costumes, the makeup, just about everything that surrounds the actors in the story. Here we go with Mary.
Deadwood has never minced words, nope. Never run away from its reputation or its history, and that's my job, is to present that history as warts and all. History is not always pretty, but that's why I love the show. That's why I love Deadwood so much. The town and the series. And you cannot begin to communicate the filth, the smell, the disgusting nature of what was here. These people were here illegally. They were scared shitless that they were going to be tossed out.
Or massacred by Indians.
And many of these people were immigrants who were trying to make their way. And so the profanity absolutely was over the top.
Right. That was not afraid to portray that.
No, he's not. But the type of profanity that was in use here probably was more along the lines of religious taboos. But if you started,
God's name in vain,
right,
and
if you started saying Jesus Christ and God damn it, that has little impact. So you have to use words today like fuck.
The words of today. Right.
Right.
The words
of today.
Even though they didn't actually exist back then.
Well, they did exist.
Well, not to
fuck,
the extent.
Fuck was used from the time of Shakespeare.
Right.
You know,
some people
prior
object
to that.
To motherfucker and cocksucker. They're saying, those words weren't used back then, and that's beside the point.
But yeah, exactly. It's beside the point. You would not get the sense of what is going on. And that's the whole thing. What people get caught up in the minutia of, did that really happen? Was that person real? You know, well, who cares? What Milch, I believe, is trying to show is how human beings react in a lawless environment, a really difficult place. And the story kind of jumps and goes from there, you know, to quote somebody from HBO who said that, but it does.
Yep.
Because you had an economic recession happening in the country. It's post-Civil War. And you have a lot of immigrants coming to this country. They have no way to make a living. They are desperate. And everybody has been sold the whole Horatio Alger story, you know, that you can
seek your fortune in Deadwood.
Well, you can become wealthy beyond all expectations.
Right.
It's kind of like what we do when we go and buy lottery tickets.
Lottery, yep.
So you have a lot of people coming here from different backgrounds, but they're all desperate. And that doesn't make them scum, per se, or the town dregs. No, they weren't. They were people who were desperate. There was no welfare system in this country. They were hungry. They had a passion for making good. And they had been sold, many of them, sold a bill of goods. You know, come to America and seek your fortune. So that's what they were doing. The people that were coming here were, you would have men, and that's primarily who was here.
Okay, I guess I'm sort of thinking of the Metz family from
the first season. No.
Okay, so they weren't typical.
No, they, well, you had some families coming, but not by and large, that was not the case. What you mostly had were men, you know, young men who were seeking their fortune. Some had been here for a while and had gone, you know, had been affected by the Civil War. Mm-hmm. But many that came here were immigrants who were trying to make good. They were seeking a fortune.
And there we have some more Deadwood history and some more interesting facts about the real Deadwood. Now we're going to have our usual little medley that precedes my my artist guest, my artist interview. And so let's listen to these tunes, and I'm pretty sure you're going to recognize who this is, and here we go.
Here she come, wearing a wig hat and shades to match. Got her high-heeled shoes and an alligator hat. Wearing a pearl and a diamond ring. Got braids, but on a finger, not in every flame. Devil with a blue dress on.
Yep, and sock it to me. As you know, that is Mitch Ryder, and here we go with the conclusion of my interview with Mitch Ryder as we sat down before he performed on Cool Deadwood Nights. Make sure you check out the realdeadwoodpodcast.com because I have a video clip there of his performance, kind of a little highlight reel of him singing his famous songs and including the two you just heard. So here we go with Mitch Ryder. Have you been to historic Deadwood before? Is this your first trip?
I believe I was here a couple decades ago.
Did you manage to get to the museum either then or now, Adams Museum?
No, I've never had time. It's always been on the wait from one job to another, as it is to this time as well.
Uh-huh. Well, my wife's the director over there, and they've been a consultant to HBO. That HBO wanted to know how much was a pick in those days, how much was a shot of whiskey, and the show itself is made up of a combination of real characters and made-up characters. You know, in the case of
I saw that fake set they built down.
That was to show. I mean, when you see the TV show, you're seeing buildings that resemble that fake thing. You know, mm-hmm. but the town itself obviously is a Victorian brick. After it burned down three times, they rebuilt it. You know, in brick. And so,
did we find out who burned it down?
Well, I mean, yeah, it was accidental things, you know, that happened in certain buildings and stuff. But the people that see the HBO show, we didn't want it to be too much of a shock for them to come here and not see something that vaguely resembled the set. Another question I wanted to ask you is, you know, you grow up, you have an affinity for music, you get in, you know, local bands, and then you get your big break and everything, and, you know, all kids that are musical dream of being famous. But is there anything now that, as you look back, that fame wasn't all quite that it was cracked up to be, or something that you didn't think fame was going to be this way?
I think the biggest sacrifice that you'll make would be family life, a nurturing and healthy family life.
Are you living in the public eye, you mean? Like?
Well, not just that, but you know, when you're hot, you're gone. You're never there.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, you got kids or whatever. There is no family life. And It's very demanding. People, they're wanting things from you all the time. If it's not interviews, it's photography sessions, recording sessions, a million different things, commercials, fundraisers, charitable events. It just goes on and on and on.
Movie stars and everybody in the public eye.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, those they obviously have faded for me, the demand, but I'm very familiar with what it takes to do all that and be all that. And I think with fame now, it's become sort of perverted because when you start creating artists by popular vote on TV shows, it gets a little bizarre. It does get bizarre.
Yeah, so. I hear you. Artificial fame. Well, and especially when your kids are younger like that, when they're growing up, but like, gosh, Bobby V with his two sons and his band and everything right now, I don't know if that's making up for lost time when they were younger, but that's kind of a nice situation there.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I'm glad that you were able to sit down and talk to me here. I appreciate it very much. And I'm really looking forward to your show tonight. You've always been one of my favorites. You, I'm probably your age, if not just a tad bit younger, but growing up in high school, you and Felix Cavalier from the Rascals.
I just worked with Felix a couple weeks ago.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I thought you were the best blue-eyed soul singers I'd ever heard, and just, you know, you blew me away then, and I'm really looking forward to your thing. How's he? I know he's got an act out. Is he out touring, or is he recording?
Yeah, I don't know what, there's some legal thing about what form of the name The Rascals he can use. But there really are two touring groups.
Right.
And Eddie Brigati actually doesn't go out, so he sang a lot of their songs.
Right.
And he's not really even there. And then Felix, of course, sang the other ones.
Yep.
It's a shame, too, because I used to be friends with all of them.
Uh-huh. Dino with his little robot act playing drums back there and throwing his sticks out in the crowd.
Right. When we first went to New York City and were on a show with them, we snickered at their knickers.
And then they got away from the whole young thing, right? They just wanted to be the Rascals.
Right.
I still listen to their stuff. I just listened to the whole album the other day, their best of album, and I listened to your stuff.
But, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, it was great. And, of course, they got psychedelic there towards the end with this Wonderful and some of that stuff.
But
Yeah, exactly. You got to market what's hot, I guess. But, well, again, thank you very much. I appreciate it very much. And best of luck to you. And where do you live now? I know...
I still live in Michigan.
So you're somewhat of a Midwestern guy.
Yeah, most of the people that came out of there still live there.
Yeah.
Really, except for Madonna, but there was a state referendum about that.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think anybody wanted her to live there. We were happy with her to be in California.
He just wanted to keep her out.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Mitch.
All right.
I appreciate it. Now, the what he called the fake set, of course, is the Deadwood facade. You heard me talking to Chuck Turbeville about that a few shows back. And you can see what that looks like at the realdeadwoodpodcast.com website. Look in the photo albums, and you will see an album that is the Deadwood facade album.
This is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Okay, next we've got my son Alex, who was a tour guide last summer at Mount Moriah Cemetery, and we're going to have the next little bit here of his tour of the resting place of Wild Bill and Calamity Jane. So here we go with Alex.
And as we walk into the Masonic section here, you'll notice these two lilac bushes at the beginning of this sidewalk here. They are set like this to represent the pillars of King Solomon's Temple as you enter. We have the sidewalk here representing the carpet that rolled up to the altar, which we do have an altar in the middle. So here we have King Solomon's Temple sitting on Mount Moriah overlooking the town. Also, you'll see as we go in on the altar the names underneath the Remember Now. These are all names of Freemasons who are buried within 20 feet of said altar. They are unmarked by their own headstone, but they do have kind of a communal headstone, I guess you could call it. Also on the top of the altar is the Holy Bible, and on the cover of the Bible is the most popular Freemason symbol of the compass in the square, which you'll see a lot on the different stones throughout here in the cemetery. Now as we walk through the Masonic section here, you can see how new some of these are, some of these stones here, but you can also see how old some of the stones here are. I mean, this one is weathered quite a bit. obviously. You can also see on this here the vandalism that's taken place in the cemetery, and that pretty much comes with any cemetery. You know, you can see that the top is broken off, and I'm assuming it was probably an equal-armed cross sitting up on the top that was knocked off. So it's too bad, you know, that people get off doing that type of thing. But as we continue on up the sidewalk here, we have another person I'd like to point out, Henrik Alexander Leopold von Wedelstedt, mainly because I like to say his name, but also because he was one of the first family pharmacists in town. And I guess what kind of made him special was that he didn't really care who or what you were, I mean, human-wise. Pretty much, if you needed treatment, he would treat you, you know, you could be a Chinese woman and knock on his door, and he'll give you the same treatment as the President of the United States. So, pretty good guy. But also, I guess he was more known, actually, for being in every secret society there was in Deadwood. He was clearly a Freemason because he is in the Masonic section here. But also, what makes him kind of interesting was that he is one of only a handful of white people to have ever been part of the Chinese Freemasons. And he is the only person that we know of who has undergone a Chinese burial. He did go through the five-step process before he was buried here, but obviously he didn't get sent back to China because, you know, he's not from China. Now, just here with all the flowers on it, we have the newest addition to the cemetery. Donald Jacobson died October 16th, 2002. So I guess before I said that no one can be buried here anymore, but that's kind of false. There are only two more open plots here in the cemetery, and there's only really room for two more people, and the plots have already been taken by people who are still alive, and so really the only way you can be buried here is if you're a direct relative of someone who was buried here previously, and if there's room for you, which there isn't too much anymore. Now, as we keep going up the sidewalk here, you notice the name Adams on the back of that monument there. This is a monument, a memorial to W.E. Adams, who is the Adams of the Adams House, is the Adams of the Adams Museum, but is not, however, the Adams of the Adams family, you know, that whole thing. So, sorry for those of you who are listening in and are disappointed by that, but what can you do? W.E. Adams is not actually buried here. He is buried in Pasadena, California, which is where he and his family eventually ended up. You'll notice on the front the death date of his daughter Helen and of his wife Alice there in the same year. They actually died 2 days apart from each other. Alice died from a disease. Helen died during childbirth, and his oldest daughter Lucille died 13 years before that. And also the baby that Helen was giving birth to did not make it. She too died. So W.E. Adams had them buried there in Pasadena and decided that he too was going to be buried with them. Now, W.E. Adams was a pretty prominent man here in Deadwood. He served as mayor for quite a few terms. He also had the Adams Museum built, which he gave to the town that gave so much. He donated it to Deadwood. I guess he kind of started a collection of little odds and ends and decided that he would find a place to put him. And like I said, you can visit adamsmuseumandhouse.org and check out their website there. They have a lot of great information to take a look at.
And of course, like a good son, there he is giving his mother's website a plug. Of course, next week we'll have some more from him and the Mount Moriah Cemetery Sound Seeing Tour. Okay, as I promised, we've got a new song now from Earl Brown, Dan Doherty, and his band Sacred Cowboys. And this is from their upcoming CD, unreleased yet, so this is a real sneak peek for all you fans. And this is a song called Tell Me Your Secrets.
Tell me your secrets, I'll tell you mine. Let me under your skin like you're under mine. I can't sleep with secrets left to divine. What are you dreaming? Maybe we're dreaming the same. Hidden in shadow lies great shame. Restless dreams not yet tame. Unburden your heart, unloose the chain.
Sang it pretty, brother. And there's Earl Brown with Tell Me Your Secrets. And now my final guest for the show is Joe Hamm from the Deadwood Chamber of Commerce, and he's going to tell us how they prepare for the fabulous events that are staged here in Deadwood all year round. So here's Joe. My guest on the Real Deadwood podcast right now is Joe Hamm. He works for the Deadwood Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau. And Joe, what exactly is your title?
Well, my title is Events Coordinator for the City of Deadwood.
Okay. So we've talked to George and we've talked to Chuck. And we've talked about all the free concerts that the city sponsors. Correct. I mean, Big and Rich for free. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
well. You know, I mean, I talk about, oh my God, that's going to be tough to top.
Yeah.
I mean, we set the bar pretty high on that one. But anyway, so now what exactly, you guys go, don't you guys go to Vegas or something and all the agents and the bookers kind of put on a show for you guys? Or how does that
work?
Yeah,
it's the IFAE conference that we go to in Vegas, and it's just fairs and international fairs and actors. We get a lot of different shows. This is where I pretty much look at my talent buyers. They come to a lot of these shows, and then we discuss pretty much what our options are as far as who's available, and some sideline gigs, some things that we might want to do that add to a show to help promote the concert. You know, it may not be just the concert that we're looking at. It may be, a Wild Western roper or, a gunslinger or something like that, something that to help enhance the show. So there's a lot of these type of, fair people that come out to these shows that try to I guess they're demonstrating some of the things that they do. And, mm-hmm. and
how many of those shows do you guys go to?
I just go to the one.
Just that one in Vegas?
I just go to, it's a real big one in Vegas.
I was going to say, how long have you guys been going there?
We've been going there for about 6 years now.
Uh-huh. And Georgia's have you seen it get bigger and bigger each year?
It has. It's huge. It's a major event.
Where's it at in Vegas?
It's in Vegas. This year it was at the Paris. Mm-hmm. It's usually at the Hilton, but the Paris is a little bigger, and it's on the main strip now, so mm-hmm. they moved it over to the main strip.
Wow.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's a great show. I mean, it's huge. There's so many people that show up that, you know, every aspect of an event that we put on in Deadwood is partially from that.
How many days does the show last?
The show's about 4 days.
So when you're looking at potential groups and stuff, are you – thinking in terms of what we need, X number of country groups, we need X number of the different genres of music. Is that what you're kind of looking for?
Yeah, I actually try to put some things together prior to going to the show as to what we want to do, where our direction is headed for the show. And then, you know.
Why don't you tell us the events that you're specifically looking to fill?
Okay, well, Wild Bill Days, of course. Last year we had Big and Rich, so we're looking to fulfill that. Mm-hmm. And that's just it's strictly a Western event.
Right.
From the physical sense. But at the same time, we try to mix it up. So the concert is a rock and roll concert on Saturday, and then of course Sunday we do our big country concert. But the show all encompasses, world fast draw competition, gun spinning. We do, poetry.
Cowboy poetry.
We've got living history from our reenactors and some of the characters mm-hmm. that come out here. We do the parade that is basically a carless parade. It's all non-motorized vehicles. Uh-huh. It takes us back to the time of Deadwood's beginning. So, you know, we kind of like that. And then that's what that whole event's all about. So when I go there, I look for, you know, things like that. And I'm not just looking for this year. Sometimes there may be a group or an act that may appeal to us.
Kind of up and coming.
Up and coming that we might want to just follow along. So we do that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's Cool Deadwood Nights, which is the 50s-60s classic automobile show. So we love that. That's been a very well established.
Now, isn't that kind of a package that Bobby V puts together? Doesn't he have a production company for the last couple of years that you guys have just basically bought his show, his package?
Yeah, actually, I mean, and that was kind of an idea that came out. We've been in the past, just, you know, we go after specific groups, and then, you know, the idea with Bobby V, which really landed in our favor, is Bobby's a real big fan of South Dakota and a real big fan of
Deadwood. Well, and he's from North Dakota.
And he's
so,
from
yeah,
North
exactly.
Dakota, so yeah, he's right here. So the idea is, you know, when Cool Deadwood Nights, as big as of an event that it is, it's ideal that we get the people coming back year after year after year.
Yeah.
So these are continuing people. What we want to do is we get them some kind of brand, some kind of identity. And Bobby V seems to focus on that identity.
Yeah.
He's from that era. You know, he knows all the acts from that era. So why not have him as just the host?
Yeah, exactly.
So we just hire him as a host for, you know, I mean, it may go on 3 or 4 more years. And then we'll probably switch out and do something different. But the idea is to have him host the show and bring on the different acts and go in the different directions we want to go.
Well, and then his sons are in his band, and then that's the backup band for all the other acts. Like this year was
absolutely
Brian Hyland and Merrilee Rush and
Mitch Ryder.
And then they knew all the music, and you don't mm-hmm. have big stage switching and anything else.
Yeah, the changeover is good. It's,
right.
It helps.
Yeah, that's
it
awesome.
It really does. Yeah, and I think it's just a great idea.
And they learn the music just the way, so close to how it was on the record.
Yeah.
It might as well be their original band
backing them up.
And it's so much more convenient and, you know, cheaper, obviously. And, and I think I was impressed. It was awesome.
Really? Yeah. That Cool Deadwood Nights is just an awesome show. And to have someone like Bobby V, you know, be a representative for South Dakota, for Deadwood in that sense, you know, it makes it worthwhile. People, you know, he gets out there, he'll talk to the individual people, you know, he'll visit with them. The meet and greets are easy. So it makes people feel like they're really coming and they're really seeing a star and they're really being able to be
a part. And he was a huge star. I mean, his songs, you know, even the young kids today, you know, you could play the music. They may not know who the guy is, but I bet you they've heard at least one of his songs sometime, you know. And, yeah, I mean, the interviews that I got with him, he was just so nice.
And, you know, in part, we picked them. you know.
Right.
They don't pick us, we pick them. So that's what's really neat about it, is we get a chance to go out and we, as the people of Deadwood, we get a chance to target the type of interest or entertainment that we're looking for.
Yep.
The type of people that will come and accept Deadwood as the way it is. Like the warmth, love the people, love the surroundings, love the environment.
Yep.
And when you find those people, they come out and they perform. And yep. It feels like they're at home, and we get that same feeling, and it's a good response. I think a lot of these people, you know, the shows are, that we put on are great. And I think a lot of the folks that come out here, Deadwood is old. And, it reflects that when you meet some of these acts that come out here, you find out that they've actually known about the Black Hills, or they've been out here in the Black Hills before.
Yeah.
And that's huge. You know, I think that's a big part of them being out here. I think they want to be out here for those reasons alone. So it's an easy sell.
Yes, it is an easy sell, and thanks a lot to Joe. We will have some more from him at some point in the future, in one of our future shows. We just had some people from the Real Deadwood here, actually the owners of Saloon Number 10, and their significant others just paid a visit to the Deadwood set at the Melody Ranch in Santa Clarita, California, as my wife and I did last March. And they just got back last week, and they toured the set and talked to the actors and had a fantastic time. So actually today is Monday, February the 6th, and 1 week from today on the 13th, I will be interviewing them. It's Louie and Lori are our sisters and two of the family who own the Saloon Number 10, and their significant others, Marty and Jim. So I'll be talking to them, and we'll hear some of their exploits and some of their adventures out in what we call now Deadwood West, out in California. Well, right now I'm going to take a look at some listener email that's been sent in. I mentioned in one of the past episodes that I had gotten an email from E.C. Van Kruning, Ernie Van Kruning from the Netherlands. And on January 28th, I got another email from him, and it says, "Hi, Paul. Thanks for the mention in Episode 5. I just wanted to let you know that I'm still subscribed and listen to your great show. Also to let you know that Deadwood will premiere on Dutch television tonight. Finally, we have the opportunity to watch HBO Deadwood proper. I hope the show will catch on over here and that it will add some subscribers to your show and its slipstream. I'll promote your cast on some of the Dutch television forums too. Cheers, Ernie." So, gee, that's great to, if you recall back when I mentioned his earlier email, he's a big Deadwood fan, and they didn't even have Deadwood in the Netherlands at that point. So he's all excited that it's finally going to be on Dutch television, and that's just great. Next, I'd like to give a shout-out to Randy Reichard from Edmonton, Canada. And he is the author of a blog called The Pod Bay Door. And it's podbaydoor.com, podbaydoor.com. And he posted in his blog, and it says, "Do you love Deadwood as much as I do? Then welcome to the motherlode. My pal Debbie sent me a link to this totally brilliant site, The Real Deadwood Podcast, which features audio and video clips, a blog, and more. The photo section is great and includes shots from the Mount Moriah Cemetery, where Wild Bill, Calamity Jane, and others are buried, and the Deadwood actors visit. Love it." And so then he's got links there and everything to the podcast. And his friend Debbie, the one who sent him the link, she says, "I can't get enough Deadwood, and it's killing me to wait until June of 06 for season 3. This will have to keep me going until then," meaning the Real Deadwood Podcast. So that's pretty slick. And he sent me an email. He had asked me how did I go about meeting all the Deadwood actors and everything, and I had emailed him back and said, "Well, you'll have to listen to episode 1 to find out about that." And then he said, "Paul, thanks. I will listen to the podcast very soon, I promise. I also totally envy that you were able to jam with John's band. I've been a guitarist for 39 years and can only imagine what a buzz that must have been to play with them." And Randy, it was, and thanks again for all your nice emails and for the nice post on your blog. Okay, here's an email from a Val Martin, and Val Martin says, "I stumbled across your podcast a couple weeks ago while searching Deadwood online. I've never watched an episode of the HBO series, although I've seen bits and pieces. I'm an historic tour guide in Cheyenne, and I feel such a connection with Deadwood, but I can't get enough of it. I'm infatuated with Deadwood. Now I'm waiting eagerly for your next episode. I think your show is entertaining and incredibly informative. I am interested in all things relating to the real Deadwood. And you have actually convinced me that I need to give the HBO version a go. I wasn't interested at first because I wanted to learn only about the true history. You make the TV show sound so intriguing. I hope I've been able to successfully subscribe to your podcast because I'd hate to miss anything. Sincerely, Val. So anyway, that's pretty awesome. You know, I'm normally picturing my typical listener as someone who is a fan of the show and now kind of maybe wants to know a little bit more about the town. And here's someone who tracked down the podcast because they were interested in the town, and now she's going to give the show a go. That's just unbelievably cool. Okay, and then my final letter for the day here says, Hi, my name is Michael Riley, and I am definitely Deadwood's biggest fan. I watch the show every night and day when I have the time. I drive my wife crazy. She doesn't understand the love I have for the show. On the other hand, she does understand my love for the Deadwood history. I can't get enough. Love the website. I think what you're doing is awesome. Please keep it going. My lifelong dream is to come to Deadwood and visit. I would be able to die a happy man. So, and that's Michael Riley, and we thank you, Michael, for your nice message there too. So don't forget, if any of you out there have some, something to say, some comments or, some feedback for the show, you can email me at realdeadwoodpodcast@gmail.com. Also, there is, on the website, a little contact page that you can click on, and there's a little, you know, there's a form there that you can fill in your comment and hit submit, and it will come directly to me. And, you know, maybe you will read it here on the show and you'll get to hear your name mentioned, to a worldwide audience. Remember, there are over 30 countries right now that are listening, and, accessing the Real Deadwood podcast website. So, we really and truly are going out to a worldwide audience. We really appreciate all you people, in Europe, in Asia, in Australia, and in South America who are listening to the show. Thank you so much, and I hope we can continue to entertain you out there. Okay, we're going to wrap up the show now with just a little bit of Deadwood news. The first thing is that the Homestake Mining Company, which is located close to Deadwood, it's right up the road here in Leeds, South Dakota. And the Homestake Mining Company has been and had been in operation for over 125 years, since the days that Deadwood was formed. And on the show, you've seen George Hurst. First, you saw, of course, Francis Wolcott, who was George Hurst's front man, who was not a nice guy. And then finally, we had Gerald McRaney playing George Hurst, who came to town and pretty much bought up all the small claims so that he could consolidate things. And so he was the founder of the Homestake Mine. Well, the Homestake Mine closed after 125 years, and they decided to donate all their everything from the mine in terms of the office, all their records, all their photographs, all their correspondence, all their drawings, all their maps, which is an unbelievable treasure of artifacts, to the Adams Museum, my wife's museum. And it necessitated her actually buying a new building just to house the whole collection and to serve as a research center. It's going to be called the Homestake Adams Research Center. So the Homestake Mining Company had a picture of the real George Hurst that had been hanging in the Homestake offices for 125 years. They gave it to my wife to send to David Milch. And so she did. She sent him the picture. And so what they did is he has the picture now hanging in the writer's room for the HBO Deadwood show for Redboard Productions. Scott Stevens, who's one of the executive producers, he had emailed us back and said, yeah, David hung the picture in the writer's room. And then David had sent back a letter thanking my wife Mary and asking us if we wanted what size T-shirts and caps would we like. So, of course, my wife and I and my son will be each wanting one of each of those. But what I'm going to do is try to get a fourth cap and T-shirt and be able to use those as prizes for some sort of contest that I'll cook up in the future here on the Real Deadwood podcast. So you might be able to win a cap or a t-shirt, possibly, directly from David Milch, from the HBO show. Now, I've mentioned on the show a number of times John Rizzo, who won an award, Emmy Award. He's the head of makeup for HBO Deadwood and is a friend of ours. He came here to visit in Deadwood, brought his dad, stayed with us a little bit, taught my son how to make homemade marinara sauce, and did some cooking here at our house. So every year he and the hair design people put together a little like a coffee mug that they give out to their friends and stuff. Well, he sent us a case of coffee mugs, and so my wife has given some out to her staff, but I have managed to latch onto a couple of Deadwood coffee mugs, the Deadwood makeup and hair department coffee mugs. So those will also be, I'll be able to use those for prizes for some sort of contest that we'll be cooking up in the future. Also, I have a book. James McLeod has recently written a book on the life of Calamity Jane. And I said, you know what, he came to the Adams Museum and he did a book signing. And I said, you know what, we need to get one of those for Robin. For Robin Weigert, who plays Calamity Jane. And so, and I said, you know what, and if you could get an extra one, maybe I could have that as a future prize. So my wife did manage to get a hold of two of James McLeod's books. I believe the one we have here is signed. I know he signed the one to Robin. So we sent the book to John Rizzo, the makeup man, and he said that he would get it to her. And sure enough, she sent us a really nice note back saying, thank you so much for the book. She wished she had the book when the series had started so she could have done a little bit of research, but better late than never, you know. So that means we have the Calamity Jane book. We'll have a mug or two from John Rizzo. And then hopefully we will have maybe a cap and a t-shirt directly from David Milch to use for prizes. Well, that brings this episode of the Real Deadwood Podcast to a close. Thank you very much for being with me, as usual. The music that you're hearing right now is from my album called Black Hills Gold. And this was instrumental music that I composed and played on a keyboard into the computer, where I was able to, through smoke and magic and software, make it sound like a whole orchestra and assign different instruments and everything else. But it was all composed and played by me. And this particular tune is called Black Hills Fairy Gold. And I mentioned that I would tell you what that is. Actually, what that is, that's the term for gold that was buried by the prospectors, very similar to the pirates when they would bury their gold on the beaches or whatever, so that they wouldn't get robbed, and then they'd draw a map and buried treasure, kind of a thing. So the legend is that some prospectors would actually bury the gold that they found so that they wouldn't get robbed and it wouldn't get stolen. And the term for that is Black Hills Fairy Gold. So that's where that the name of this particular tune came from. And you can buy this tune or any of the other tunes from my CD individually as downloads at iTunes. And there's a link on the Real Deadwood Podcast website that will take you directly to my page, the Paul Dennis page in iTunes. And then if you wanted to buy the entire CD in plastic as a real CD instead of just downloading it, there's a link there also that will take you to my music website, pauldennis.com. And you could buy a CD or a cassette and pay through PayPal. So don't forget to check out the realdeadwoodpodcast.com. There are links there to videos. I'm adding more and more videos all the time. And also there are links there on how to subscribe to the Real Deadwood Podcast. And by subscribing, that means that it will, depending on how you do it, you'll see that there are 3 or 4 or 5 different ways to do it. But what will happen is every time there's a new episode, you will automatically either get it automatically or be notified of it automatically. And so that way you won't miss any of the fun, any of the news, any of the information, any of the entertainment that I try to bring you every time here on the Real Deadwood Podcast. So that is it. Thanks again for being with me. From the Real Deadwood, South Dakota, this is Paul Dennis wishing you all the best.